You're listening to the Miscarriage Doula Podcast. I'm your host, Arden Cartrett. This space is meant to be a tool for you to feel less alone and to learn more about how to get through what you've been through and what you're probably going through. We'll hear diverse stories from women and men in the online space, experts and people just like you and me who are feeling the effects of miscarriage and loss in real time. This is the Miscarriage Doula Podcast. Before we get into today's episode, I really wanted to let you know about some of the offerings that we have over on the Miscarriage Doula. Starting in late July, early August, and late August, as late as August 25th, we have group support circles covering first trimester miscarriages, second trimester miscarriages, recurrent pregnancy loss, which we consider to be two or more miscarriages at any gestation. We also have a group for anyone going through IVF that has also experienced miscarriage. We have a group for couples, which is super limited access. There's only a couple of couples allowed in there. We also have a couple of different pregnancy after loss groups. All of our groups run for 12 weeks. They meet on the same day on Zoom call, so you get to video chat with your new friends every single week. You have access to a WhatsApp group chat, that way you can stay in touch between the weekly calls. You also get exclusive content, and it's just nice to be around people who understand you, where there's no judgment. It's a safe place to talk about what you've been through and what you're going through and process in real time as you navigate this journey of life after miscarriage. So I wanted to let you know about those groups because they are starting really soon and a lot of them only have one or two seats left. I created a promo code for anybody who wants to join. You can use the code PODCAST for 10% off. They have monthly payment plans, or you can pay in full, and the 10% goes for either one of those. You can visit themiscarriagedoula.co/group-support or visit the link in today's show description. Christine, welcome to the Miscarriage Doula Podcast. I'm so thankful that you're here to share your story. I'm going to pass the mic over to you and just ask you to get started wherever you feel like your story starts.
All right. So yes, my name is Christine, and thank you for having me today. I appreciate it. I would say my story starts back in 2007 when I met my now husband. We met our senior year of high school, and if you went to high school in around 2007, you would know that Jonah Hill was a really popular actor, and everyone really liked all of his movies, like Superbad, and there was a few others. So me and my husband really connected over those movies, and we kind of just made a joke, you know, back in 2007, 2008, that we would like to one day name our son Jonah if we ever had a son together. And I thought that was really cool because Jonah is also my favorite story in the Bible about Jonah and the well, and how, you know, God asked Jonah to go preach to the people of Nineveh. And Jonah said, absolutely not. And he got on a boat and he went the opposite way. And I just always resonated with that story. So was just always something in the back of my mind about naming our first child Jonah, or our first son, I should say. So, you know, we got married in 2012, and, you know, we got the house. We were established in our jobs, and my husband was really wanting to have a baby. And I was 26 at the time, and I remember he was asking to have a baby. We were in the middle of Home Depot, and I started crying in the aisle, and I was like, I don't want to have a baby yet. Like, this is just all happening too quickly, even though we were like together for a decade at that point. And, so my mind changed. I would say in about a year after that, I was like, yeah, let's start, you know, building our family. You know, I thought it was going to be super simple. Like they tell you, you know, you have sex one time and you're pregnant, and you learn that all growing up through high school. And so I thought it would be easy, but it wasn't. Cycle after cycle, negative, negative, negative. And I'm a very by the rule type of person. So I refuse to see a fertility doctor until I actually hit that year mark, right? I was still in my 20s. I shouldn't have had any issues with fertility. So I did. I waited until it was exactly a year when we first started trying. We went to a fertility doctor. He did so many tests, so much blood work. And it turns out, I mean, I'm kind of a science nerd too. And so I'll just tell you, the issue was my body was for some reason like killing all of my husband's sperm. So the sperm was never, you know, making its way upward where it needed to go. So the really easy solution to that was to do an IUI, because you're kind of bypassing, you know, all of the yucky stuff and getting straight into the cervix. I hope I'm saying this right. But we did an IUI and it worked on the first try. I got my first positive pregnancy test after 16 cycles of nothing. So we were so excited. We found out it was a little girl at our 20-week ultrasound, and we had a really uneventful pregnancy, and we named her Nora. And so we figured when we were going to start trying for baby number two, we would have the same kind of issue. So we said, well, let's start when Nora turns one. And, you know, by the time, you know, she's almost two, maybe then we'll be pregnant by then. And, you know, we just thought the age gap would work really nicely. But it turns out I got pregnant naturally on the first try. And so we had two babies under two. We had another little girl. And her name is Ellie, and she's just beautiful. And so, you know, fast forward, we wanted to have one more. We always said we wanted three, and we always wanted to try for the boy. And so we were going to start in 2020, but when COVID hit, we said, well, let's put a freeze on that, and we'll just wait until everything kind of blows over. And then we just realized that, like, it's probably not going to blow over. So we decided that October of 2021, we were going to try for, you know, our last baby. We're going to, you know, pray for a boy. And so sure enough, we started trying in October, got pregnant on the first cycle. Again, we just thought, you know, how blessed we were that that happened. And because it was my last baby, I said, you know, I'm going to do things different. I'm going to spend the money how I want to spend it. Like, I'm going to buy the early gender reveal test because I always wanted to do that. And, you know, it's my last baby. Why not? I'm going to buy the sneak peek ultrasound because, you know, why not? It's my last baby. I'm just going to, you know, go all out and celebrate. So looking back, I'm glad I did. I think at 8 weeks or 9 weeks, you can send in your blood work. So I did that. And the test results came back. It was a boy. I was sitting at work and the email came through and I called my husband and my girls in here. And I said, let's see what the baby is. And it said, you're having a boy. And so we were just so excited. And we said, you know, here's our Jonah. We've been talking about Jonah since 2007. And here we are, you know, in 2021, and we finally have Jonah. And it was just a beautiful moment. And we went to a sneak peek ultrasound around 9 weeks because my doctor actually couldn't fit me in until I was 13 weeks. So I just wanted to kind of make sure that it was, the pregnancy was located in the right spot, the baby had a heartbeat, all that good stuff. So we went to the sneak peek ultrasound. I was only 9 weeks, but we did see the baby. He was in a good spot. He had a heartbeat. Everything looked great. And so, you know, we went home, waited for our doctor's appointment. So when our doctor's appointment came, you know, she was able to do kind of like a at the bedside ultrasound with this tiny little device. I'd never seen that one before. It's kind of new technology. She said, the baby's looking good. He's still, you know, his heartbeat's looking good. She did notice that maybe there's another sac in there. And so she goes, well, let's get you scheduled for the formal ultrasound just to, you know, make sure everything's good and take a look at that other sac. So around 13 weeks, we had our, you know, first official big ultrasound, and we saw the baby. I mean, he was jumping around. He looked a lot bigger by then. And we did, the ultrasound tech did see a second sac, and it was just as big as Jonah's sac. And so she goes, oh, well, you know, this is a vanishing twin. And she goes, it shouldn't be an issue. Typically it just gets reabsorbed and, you know, your other baby goes on to live and to, you know, have a healthy pregnancy. You're not going to have to worry about this at all. So they did have us talk to one of the doctors there before we left, which was really, it just sat really wrong with me. I had two other babies at the same ultrasound place at the same, you know, provider. I've never been walked down that hallway to talk to a doctor. So that really made me nervous. But we sat with the doctor and he assured us that everything looked great. This is just a formality. If you have a vanishing twin, they just want to follow you just a tad closer. So he was kind of on the fence whether or not he wanted us to come back for a 16-week ultrasound. We did mention like, oh, well, you know, we don't mind coming back. And he goes, I know you did the early gender reveal and you said it was a boy, but just know that because there's this vanishing twin present that you could be picking up the DNA from that twin. And so he's like, don't hold your breath. And then he said, also, you really can't do the standard DNA testing because you might pick up the twin's DNA and it's just not going to be reliable. You know, there's some other tests you can do. But I was like, you know, it wouldn't change the way me and my husband felt about our pregnancy. If something came back, genetically wrong with the baby, we would still progress with the pregnancy. So I'm like, it's okay. We don't have to know anything to that effect. So he said, well, you know, I think we don't need to see you at 16 weeks for an ultrasound. He's like, but because I know you're anxious to confirm that this is a boy, we'll just schedule anyways, just for fun. So I said, okay, great. That sounds fun. And so, you know, go home, keep moving onward with my pregnancy, you know, keep going to my OB appointments. Everything's going fine. We go to the 16-week ultrasound. We see the baby on the screen. He's looking perfect, even bigger than before. He's kicking and moving around. We confirm that it's a boy. I mean, he didn't want to move his legs, but the ultrasound tech goes, well, you know, get up, you know, do some laps. Like, let's see if we can get him to move his legs upwards just so that we could just confirm. And sure enough, after I did that, he moved his legs upward. And so it was just a really cool ultrasound. And, you know, hindsight, so glad that that was scheduled because it'd be the last time we would see him like alive. So we were just overjoyed. I don't know what other way to put it. And I want to add that, you know, because this was my third baby, I started feeling him moving in my stomach around 14 weeks. I could feel the flutters really low in my stomach. And I thought that was really cool. And I would feel him pretty much in the mornings and at night when the house would get quiet, the girls were in bed, I could feel those movements if I like really focused. But I would say around the 17 week mark, I didn't feel him at all. I would even shake my stomach and I wasn't feeling anything. And I remember telling, you know, some family members and my husband, like, I'm not feeling him. And everyone's like, well, don't worry, because, you know, you're not supposed to kick count until you're like, you know, until you're about 23, 24 weeks pregnant. So I really did push that feeling aside. I had an OB appointment when I was 17 weeks pregnant. And I do remember her putting the wand on me to try to find the heartbeat, and it took over a minute. And she said she finally found the heartbeat and we could hear it, but it sounded far to me. It sounded kind of like my own heartbeat. And, but you know, she's the doctor. And so I was like, oh, thank God she found that. And I remember going home and having a video chat with my boss, and she wanted to know about the appointment. And I said, appointment went great, but she had a hard time finding the heartbeat. Took her about a minute. She finally found it. You know, how awful would that be if he didn't have a heartbeat and then I'd have to like deliver him? Oh, that would just be awful. And my boss is like, yeah, you know, I'm so glad she found the heartbeat. So, you know, kept progressing in my pregnancy, and I had my 20-week ultrasound on in mid-February, and I was so excited for it. I remember when I hit the 20-week mark in my pregnancy, I I was really proud of how I looked because prior, you know, starting in January of 2021, I went on a lifestyle change. I started working out every single day. I changed my diet. I lost 45 pounds and I was really into fitness and lifting weights. And so, you know, my whole pregnancy with Jonah, every day I was lifting and I was, you know, doing my exercises. And so my weight did matter to me for some reason. It never did with any of my other pregnancies, but I was kind of prideful about like how great I looked at 20 weeks pregnant. I barely had a little bump and I just thought, wow, you know what? My lifestyle is so great. And so I took a picture of myself at 20 weeks pregnant and I posted it on Instagram and I said, 20 weeks pregnant, can't wait to meet you, you know, my son. And I posted it and that picture always will haunt me because I did go to my 20 week ultrasound a couple of days after I posted that to Instagram. And, you know, it's your 20 week ultrasound. It's supposed to be really exciting, but I was nervous. I remember sitting in the waiting room and I looked at my husband and I said, I hope he's okay, because if he's not, he's just a really quiet baby and I'm not used to that. I'm used to, you know, being pregnant with girls and then bouncing around in my stomach all day. So we go to the ultrasound room and, you know, I lay down and she puts the wand on my stomach. And I remember thinking when I first saw him, I thought, wow, he looks funny to me. There's just the way his body was oriented. And the first thing the ultrasound tech lady said was, God, he's in such a bad position. And I'm just thinking, okay. In my head, I was thinking like, can you please just like go to his heart? Let's make sure his heart's beating. Cause I was really concerned about that. I just had a weird feeling just because of the lack of movement. And she goes to his head first and, she's measuring his head, right? She wants to make sure everything measures out to being around, you know, 20 weeks, 3 days or whatever it was at the time. And I'm just looking at the screen, not paying attention to her. And all of a sudden she goes, she says, I got to get the doctor. There's no heartbeat. And I like sit up instantly and I go, what? And she goes, there's no heartbeat. I said, are you joking? She goes, no. And I like rip off my mask in kind of like a dramatic way because I don't know why. I can't explain to you why I ripped off my mask. But I said, I want you to check again. I want you to check again. And she like bought into my crazy. And she told me to lay down and she put the wand over my stomach again and he didn't have a heartbeat. And she's like, yeah, he doesn't have a heartbeat. I'm going to get the doctor. And I just started screaming. Like I was just screaming, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Cause I didn't know what else to say. And my husband was looking at me and he was crying and he was just like holding on to me. And I'm just screaming, for Jesus, you know, to help me and to give me strength in that moment. Cause I really thought I was going to like lose control of my body. And, I just was crying. I don't know. It was awful. And it was just us two in the room. And I thought in my head, I said, I better be quiet because they're going to kick me out because I was being just a little crazy. And, she comes back and she goes, we need to take you to this other room. So again, they walk me down that hallway and we sit in this room and it's a nurse practitioner in the room or a nurse. I'm not quite sure who she was. She wasn't the doctor. And she started presenting me and my husband with like bracelets and teddy bears and rocks to remember our baby. And I'm just like, I just found out he died like a few moments ago. I didn't want the bracelets, the teddy bears, the rocks. Maybe for some people that was comforting. It was not for me. It was overwhelming for me at that very moment. So I was like, I don't want them. I don't want them. I don't want them. I was like, I just want to know, like, when did my baby die? Like, how did this happen? Like, am I going to be okay? Like what do we do next? And she's like, well, I can't get a hold of your doctor. I can't get a hold of any doctors. So you just got to go home and wait for someone to call you. So I was like, okay. So we get up and we walk out and we get in our car. And as soon as we get in our car, a doctor calls. It's not my doctor. It's a random doctor. And she goes, you know, sorry, this happened. Here are your options. You can have a D&E or you can be induced. I guess because I was over 20 weeks, I had to be induced. I don't know. But when I thought about the DNE, for me, I just didn't want to know that, you know, he'd be taken out in pieces and I wouldn't be able to like actually like formally see him and meet him. So I did choose the induction route. It just seemed like it would be better for me and me and my husband. And so we said we'd pick to be induced, and they said, okay, well, we have an opening at the hospital at 8 at night, and it was like 2 p.m. at that point. So I said, okay, that's fine. So we drive home, and I, you know, my kids are at home with my sister, and, you know, they're excited to see me. And I had to break them. I had to tell them, you know, they were only two and four. I had to tell them like, hey, you know, Jonah is in heaven with Jesus. You know, I'm sorry. Sometimes these things happen. And they didn't really understand. They were just excited to spend the night at my sister's house. And it sounds so morbid, but like, they just had no idea what was going on. So, you know, my sister leaves me with the two girls and my husband, and we're just kind of sitting on the couch watching TV. My daughter accidentally headbutted me in the eye, you know, during this whole moment, and it hurt so bad. And I just kind of lost it emotionally. I was just like, God, I failed. I kept screaming like how I failed as a mom, like to my baby, you know, who was dead. And my eye was hurting, and it was just a really bad moment. My girls hated that I was upset. So then they were upset. So I was kind of happy when 8 p.m. rolled around, just so that they could go have fun and we could just, you know, go to the hospital and take care of what we had to take care of. So, by the way, I mentioned that story because that did give me a black eye. And so like the next day after giving birth to Jonah, I had a black eye, and I just looked horrible. That's why I added that to the story. But we get to the hospital at 8, and I go up to the front desk, and the lady thinks we're just visitors. You know, I don't look pregnant. And she goes, why are you here? I'm saying, I'm here to be induced. And her eyes go down to my stomach. And that, I don't know why, but that really hurt my feelings when she looked at my stomach. And she goes, when's your due date? And then again, I was like, oh my God, it's not till July. And she asked me just all these questions. And apparently my doctor didn't call over the order to have my bed ready at 8. And so she just had so many questions. She was just doing her job, but like every question she was asking was really hard for me. And so she goes, take a seat. We'll call you guys when your room's ready. So we sat down, and we were there for like 40 minutes. The security guard came up to us kind of asking us what we were doing there. And we said, oh, we're waiting on our room. And he goes, oh, are you visiting someone who just had a baby? And I'm like, God, you know, why you got to ask that? And I was like, no, I said, I'm here to have my baby. And he again looks at my stomach, and he's just thinking, what's going on? And I go, our baby's dead. You know, I just had to tell them like it is. And he got on his knees, and he like touched my husband's shoulder and looked into his eyes. I was like, I'm so sorry for you guys. And I'm like, it's fine. You know, we're okay. So finally around 9 o'clock at night, the room was ready. So we go into the hospital doors, and we go to my room, and it's the same as any other baby, any other birth. You have to, you know, wipe your entire body down in this liquid. I think it's because if they have to do an emergency C-section, your body's more sterile or something. And then they have you put on the hospital gown. So it was just me and the nurse in the bathroom getting, you know, changed. And I looked at the nurse and I said, have you ever took care of a woman whose baby was dead and would be born dead? And she goes, no, you're my first. And then she like embraced me. And I thought that was very sweet of her to do that. But then it kind of raised up the anxiety in me. I'm like, well, she doesn't know what she's doing. Like, she's never done this before, but she was an angel on earth, and she took great care of me. And so they sat us down in the room. I got on the bed, and the nurse explained to me everything that was going to happen. That, you know, if I wanted to start out the night by getting an epidural, I could do that before they even started the induction. Which I chose to do. So we did get the epidural before anything started. And then she told us about what to expect when the baby was born, you know, and she told us that we'd have to pick out a funeral home. We'd have to make arrangements for him and just all of these things that we had no idea that you have to do funeral arrangements. Nothing. Like, this was crazy. So it was just so much to take in, and she hooked me up to a monitor, just to monitor, my contractions. But the monitor also picks up the baby's heart too. And you can see all of the women's on the floors, their monitors in our room, because I guess it's how the nurses keep track of all their patients when they're dealing with another patient. And so it just really sucked for me to look up at that monitor and see, you know, everyone's monitor had, you know, two lines, a baby's line and the mom's line, and mine only had one. It was just hard. I don't know. It was little things like that that was hard. But they basically, to start the induction, they put a pill in my cervix. I don't know if it was in, around, it was somewhere around there. And this pill basically just opened up your cervix. And she said it could take one pill, it could take, you know, six pills. You just don't know. It really depends. So we started the pills around midnight, and we just waited, and they would come and check on me every few hours or so, and it was kind of calm. I told my husband to please go to bed. It was going to be a long day the next day, so he was able to sleep. I wasn't able to sleep. I was just, my mind was going a million miles per hour. When the sun was starting to come up, they were still switching out the pills. Really, I was feeling no movement. It was like, you know, 5 or 6 in the morning. I called my mom, and I've never had my mom at any of my other births. I'm just kind of private when it comes to that, but for some reason I wanted my mom to, you know, be able to hold her grandson. And we could only get one visitor because COVID restrictions, you can only have one. It has to be the same person the entire day. So I chose, obviously I'm going to choose my mom, right? So I called my mom and I said, you know, I think it's almost time. I'm feeling like it's almost time. Can you get over here? You know? And she goes, yeah. And so she's on her way. And this was about 8:30 in the morning. I started feeling like the contractions, which was weird because I was on a really heavy dose of epidural. And so I was like, nurse, can you please like bump up my epidural? Give me something, like this is hurting really bad. And she did, and I could still feel the contractions. I'm like, this is strange. But the nurse was like, well, it probably means that it's almost time. And so my mom still wasn't there. And I just, me and my husband were just kind of sitting there just talking and watching TV. And I was still in kind of some pain, not excruciating. I mean, anybody can deal with it, especially if you're on an epidural. But I felt like something pop down there. And then I felt something like, you know, slide out. And I called the nurse. I said, I think he's here. And so she looked, and sure enough, he was born. I didn't have to push or anything. He came out in his water sac, completely intact with the placenta. I think the popping sensation was the placenta just, you know, detaching, and it all just came out in one a bit, which is, my doctor let me know that that's like best case scenario, because sometimes the placenta doesn't want to detach, and then, you know, you're still technically in labor. And so I remember just avoiding looking at him because it was hard, you know. And I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry at all.
This is just the hardest part, but I'll get back. She takes him to, you know, the baby warmer, and the doctor looks at him. She takes him out of the water sack, and she says that he looks perfect. Like, she can't see anything wrong with him visually. So honestly, I would have preferred like the cord was wrapped around his neck, or just something that could, like, I could blame it all on, you know, but she couldn't see anything. So she wrapped him in a blanket and put a hat on him. And I didn't want to hold him because I was scared to hold him. I thought that I just thought I'd have an anxiety attack because I'm kind of prone to anxiety. So my husband held him first. And when I was watching my husband hold him, I can't see his face, the baby's face. But my husband's just crying and he's kind of just walking back and forth in the hospital room, just holding him. And my heart's just breaking because my husband, he's the best dad in the world. And he lives to be a dad. I mean, there's no way about it. He's just a great dad. And so this was his son, and I know that he always wanted a son. And so my heart was just broken. And give me one second. I'm sorry. So I told my husband, like, I'm ready to hold him. And, you know, when I held him, it was just like I was meeting someone I already knew, and he was beautiful to me. And I just talked to him and I told him I'm sorry, you know, that it didn't work out right. Like, I was sorry. And I told him about his sisters and that I loved him, and I wanted to be his earthly mom so bad. And I just held him for 2 hours. My mom finally showed up. She held him. I think we all cried so much. And the nurses were so phenomenal. They forced us to take pictures. I didn't want to take pictures. They forced us. They're like, you're going to want this, mom. Like, you need these photos. And I was so glad they did, you know, looking back. But they took his footprints, and I just kind of looked over his body. I looked at his feet, his hands, his knees. His knees were cute to me. His arms, his hands, his eyes. And he looked like my husband. He had really prominent eyebrows and big lips, which my husband has. So he just looked so much like my husband. And it was just a beautiful moment. Like, even though it was sad, it was so pretty. And I was just so blessed to get that opportunity to hold him and to talk to him. And I remember the nurses, they were so sweet too. They were just like telling me how handsome he was. And, you know, I know he didn't look like a normal baby. I don't know if I said this in my story, but he only grew, he stopped growing at 16 weeks and 6 days. So I've been Googling this, you know, for the life of me, I can't figure it out. So if any of your listeners know, if they know, I would love for them to tell me. But I don't know if when you stop growing, you like automatically die, or if like you stop growing, you die like a few days or weeks after that. So I don't, all I know is that his body only grew 16 weeks, 6 days. And, but I was pregnant 20 weeks, 3 days, right? Like I didn't know he was gone. And so he was little. He was almost a 70-week-old baby. So, you know, he looked different. And because I'm assuming he had been dead for weeks inside of me, you know, he looked different, and his body was already, you know, starting to, you know, make the change. And the nurse brought bags of ice to kind of slow down, like decomp, which I hate saying it, but it was just my reality. What can I say? This is what really happened. And so, you know, after about 3 or 4 hours of us holding him, I was just like, you know, it's time to say goodbye. You know, we believe that this is just his earthly body and he's in heaven. And so it's just his body. I kept just telling him, it's just his body. It's just the shell, right? Like, he's in heaven. You know, I can say goodbye right now. So they took him, and I do remember they gave us back the blanket he was wrapped in just for a keepsake. And they went to go take off his little beanie. And I was like, don't take off the beanie. It was really cute. And so, they left it on him. I don't know, for some reason, I still just felt like, as his mom, I needed to make sure like he was warm and he was cozy, even though that clearly didn't matter the moment. It just made me feel like I was making a good decision for my son. So, they take him away and, you know, the doctors, they're checking on me and they think everything looks pretty good. They offer me to go home. And I said, you know, I just feel like I need one more day here. It's just being thrown back into, you know, taking care of the home, taking care of the kids. It just seemed like a lot. So they wheeled me over to the women's unit. They didn't want me to stay in the postpartum. They don't want me to hear the other babies crying, and I get it. But I just think that the level of care I got in the women's, it wasn't as good. It took them 6 hours to bring me pain meds, and that's just ibuprofen. And I was in a lot of pain for some reason, even though I didn't birth like, you know, an 8-pound baby. I birthed maybe an almost 1-pound baby. It still hurt. And my hips were hurting. And, you know, after 6 hours, they brought me my ibuprofen, and it was only 100 milliliters like that. And I was like, 100. I was like, you know, when I'm at home, I take like 400, and that's just for a headache. I'm like, can you give me anything more? Like, this was just, it seemed kind of cruel. And sure enough, they called my doctor and she just wrote down the wrong milligram. So they were able to bring me more, but it took like 7 hours just to get pain relief, which was hard. And so anyways, I mean, I was okay. I was holding it together. But you know, when the night came and my husband was asleep and the nurses were, you know, leaving me alone, I just remember waking up at like 4 a.m. and I was just crying, like sobbing hysterically, just couldn't believe like what I had just been through. Like, I just couldn't believe that was happening to me. Couldn't believe I lost my baby, and all of these things were hitting me. And, but when the sun came up, you know, I felt okay again. And, when it was the next day, the, you know, some lady walked in the room and she was preparing his death certificate, which we also had to create, which was like crazy to me too. And she asked me, you know, what's your son's full name? And that really made me cry, because when I answered her, I was realizing that like, it was going to be the only time that somebody would ever ask me in an official manner what his name was. And so it just, it ignited like so much emotion in me. And we were discharged to go home, and the nurses at labor and delivery, they put all of our photos that they took, the blanket he was in, his footprints, they put that all in a box. And so we held the box out while we were leaving the hospital, and they don't even roll you out in the women's unit. So I was hobbling out. It was just not cute. And I just remember walking through those doors with that box in my hand, without my baby, and just thinking, wow, like, this was super painful. And I just kept telling myself, my mantra in life is, you know, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And I just kept saying that over and over again, like, I can do this. I can walk out of this hospital. Like, I can get in the car. I can go see my 2 girls. Like, I can do all of these things. And, so we get home, and I just remember when the girls got there, it was just bizarre, just sitting in the house after just experience all of this trauma. And I showed my sister the box of Jonah's things. And after I showed her everything, it took less than a minute. I'm like, you know, this is his life if it's in a box. And me and my sister, we just were sobbing together, just holding each other, like, it was just sad. And so, you know, I have so many questions, like, if he stopped growing at 16 weeks and 6 days, did my doctor really find a heartbeat, you know, at my 17 week appointment? I don't know if she did. I had all these questions about what went wrong. I blamed myself so much because of the working out. I was lifting weights every single day. I never missed a workout. And I thought, well, that probably did it. we also painted our kitchen cabinets. We had a company do it, and it was around the 16 weeks mark. And I was like, well, maybe it was the fumes from the paint, like that could have killed him. I was just thinking, like, what did it, like, you know? So that was so hard for me. You know, I just tried to go back to life as normal, and I wanted to go back to work immediately. And my boss was another angel on earth, because she forced me. She goes, "You're not coming back." She's like, "You need to take a month off." She goes, "You need to spend time with your husband. You need to spend time with your girls. You need to process this." And I'm so glad she forced me to do that, because I only took 3 weeks, because I'm crazy. I was like, it was a good 3 weeks to just process. And but I needed to go back to work, because I needed to feel normal again. My job is a big part of my life. I really enjoy what I do, so I needed to get back. But you know, what was hard is just navigating the family, you know, having to tell all of our extended families, our brothers, our sisters, you know, my husband is one of 7 children. So having to tell all his siblings, like, you know, that the baby, you know, passed away, that was just all so hard. And, you know, planning his funeral while other people in our immediate circle were planning their baby showers was so darn tough. And, you know, I heard all of the stupid sayings from people that, like, this happened for a reason, and maybe something was wrong with him. And, like, you know, all of the things. I also heard a lot of, well, you could just have another baby, like, you know, like that would make any difference. So that has also been tough to navigate, but we're getting through it. What helps me to get through this, because now we're almost 4 months out, this is really fresh. Yeah. It's super fresh. What helps me personally is just knowing that, you know, my belief is that God is sovereign and he's in control. He knew my son's life was only going to be 16 weeks and 6 days long. And so that just brings me comfort. And I did they did ask me if I wanted to do an autopsy on him. I said no. Retrospect, I wish I would have said yes. I got back the results, the pathology of my placenta. And I'll say this in an unscientific way, but basically there was no blood exchange between the baby and my placenta. So much so that my body was already making alternative routes, trying to get blood to the baby. They don't know why that happens. They said it could be so many reasons. It could be a weird placement of the umbilical cord. The placenta could have been placed oddly. The baby's heart could have been not, you know, pumping blood out efficiently. It could have been so many things.
Right.
So that didn't help me, at all, but whatever. When I went to my 6-week appointment, my doctor walks in the room and she sits down and she looks at me and she goes, "Oh man, I'm just so sorry that your baby's umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck." And I was like, looked at her. Yeah. I looked at her for a moment. I said, "Are you sure?" And she goes, "Yeah, that's what I saw." I said, "I don't think so." I said, "I read all the medical records after discharge, because that's just the type of person I am." And I said, and I remember that you told me that you saw nothing visually wrong with him.
Right.
And so she paused and looked at her medical record and she goes, "Oh, you got to forgive me. 3 other babies have died since yours have died. So I'm just confusing the cases."
Oh no.
Yeah. And I'm just like, you know, it matters to me, right? Yeah. That we have a truth. And, because of, like, my background and what I do for a living, like, reading documents and legal paperwork is, like, my thing. And I could just imagine another woman, if being told the same thing, would have walked away thinking that was her truth. And so it really bothered me.
Yeah. And like, just read a chart before you walk into a room.
It's that not way you that can, difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I hear it so often. I've experienced that, and I'm not sure why we don't do better.
Exactly. And it still bugs me because I don't think she found a heartbeat at the 17 week. I really don't. And I went, 3 weeks with my baby dead inside of me, and I had no idea. And that bothers me too, because something bad could have happened. Obviously I'm not going to go back to that doctor, and I let her know, like, hey, respectfully, I'm just going to go see someone else for my care moving forward. And I don't know. That's really my story. And I'm just in the middle of just healing and moving on and, just being a good mom for my two living children. Because I mean, they deserve a great life. And so that's what I'm trying to give them. And I'm so grateful that I do have two living children, because I couldn't imagine walking away from that hospital, going into an empty house with no kids. Cause I do remember the infertility feelings.
Right.
And that would have just really, that just would have made it 10 times worse. So because the girls just occupy so much of my time and my energy that it's been healing in of itself, that I'm not sitting here wallowing in it, you know?
Yeah. And do you feel like the news of the vanishing twin aspect of that, because so much happened in your pregnancy that I feel like it's a lot to cope with, do you think that the vanishing twin aspect added grief, added confusion? Have you been able to really think about that because of everything else that happened?
When we found out and confirmed it was a vanishing twin at the 13-week ultrasound, I cried when we left that appointment.
Right.
But I think the difference between, because I still believe that the twin was a baby. Like, you know, I just believe that, you know, if there's a sac there, there's DNA there, that's my baby, that's my child. But the difference is I didn't create a whole life, you know, mm-hmm. for that twin, like I did for Jonah, because I found out Jonah was a boy at 8 weeks. So I already like fantasized this whole child, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it has made me think that the vanishing twin or whatever happened with that twin may have had something to do with, you know, Jonah's, demise.
Yeah.
And I heard on your podcast too about like mono twins. And I don't know. It's like, I was thinking like, maybe it was. And no, like, because what bothers me is that we did have an ultrasound at 16 weeks. And if he stopped growing 6 days after that ultrasound, why didn't they notice the decrease in blood flow? If my body had created new avenues to push blood, you would think that they would have caught that, you know?
Yeah, it's the hope that they would be able to catch it. I think, unfortunately, in so many ways, like, science has pushed us forward, right? And then in so many ways, there's still so much unknown, where unfortunately, a loss a lot of times happens and weeks go by without really realizing that it happened. And I don't know what we can do about that. I don't know what that solution is, because it's heartbreaking to learn that you thought your baby was alive for weeks, to learn that they weren't.
Yeah. And like I said, that picture I posted on Instagram really haunted me, because I was bragging about like how great I looked at 20 weeks. Well, I didn't have a belly because my baby was dead. And like, I felt so stupid. Like, why did I even care about how much I weighed or how I looked? Like, I've deleted all of my social media. It's been 4 months now, you know, and I can't reactivate it, because I feel so silly for even posting that photo. Like, it still haunts me for some reason.
Well, I understand that it haunts you, but I want you to know that you're not silly. It's not anything to feel any type of way about other than sadness, because you posted it as a mom who thought everything was okay and wanted to celebrate that pregnancy. And there's nothing wrong with those feelings. It's unfortunate that you're in the position to feel uncomfortable now about that post.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I don't know. The miscarriage, I don't know if to call it a stillborn or a miscarriage, but it just has opened my eyes to just so many different things about what's important, who really matters in your life. And so when I thought about all of the people that I followed on social media or that followed me, I'm like, these people just, they don't really even know me. So why am I posting for them? Like, you know, it just didn't make sense for me personally. And so it has also been healing, just focusing more on my family and putting down the Facebook and the Instagram. And so I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever go back, but for today, I don't see it in my near future.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, people listening probably think, you know, they're probably in the same position where they deleted social media or deleted the app. I know that that is something that always helps people after loss, because it's like an elimination of triggers as well. Like, you don't see other pregnancy announcements or pictures of babies, which can be really helpful. So I don't think it's a terrible thing to not have social media if it's helpful to you, you know?
Yeah. The triggers are real too. The seeing pregnant women is hard. And it was hard for me when I was going through infertility. So it's almost kind of like the same feelings are being brought up, is just being around pregnant women.
Yeah.
So hard, especially because my due date is coming up. It's in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And so seeing really big pregnant women, it's just a reminder of like, that's how I was supposed to look right now. And yeah, the woman that I work out, I do at home YouTube workouts every morning. And I work out to her, name's Sydney Cummings. She posts a brand new workout every day, and she's 9 months pregnant. We were both pregnant at the same time. And I honestly had to stop working out with her for a few months, because seeing her work out pregnant was such a trigger. And I just started reworking out with her live, like during her live workouts. And that pushing through those triggers have helped me too. Like, just forcing myself, like, I can't avoid pregnant women my whole life. Like,
right.
I got to get over this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not necessarily getting over, but it is coping with it. And I think that's, you know, I think that's something to really be proud of, because that's a big turning point in moving forward, is being able to push through those triggers and still do things that you enjoy, even though it might not be the easiest sight to see, you know?
Yeah, it's very true. Very true. But we're getting through this. And, you know, if anything, I've learned about grief, and I've learned about triggers and grief when it comes to anything, right? Like, my boss just got diagnosed with cancer, and I didn't want to say the stupid cliches to her. So I Googled it, and I found out that, like, there are cliche things you can tell cancer patients. And like, it's stuff that I would have naturally said, you know?
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
Yeah. I think this really shows you, you know, I'm sure you learned it through infertility too, because everything you go through it, there's these cliche things, or with pregnancy loss, there's these things, and then cancer. It's shocking that people say things that can be even remotely insensitive. But I think that going through pregnancy loss really opens your eyes to that stuff, and shows you that people just want you to be there for them. You don't need to say the perfect thing. You just exist and be there and support them however they need.
100%. And we did have, I mean, and too with family, you could tell the family members that didn't handle grief well versus those that did, because there were some family members who like would just avoid us because it was too painful. And others who would just embrace us and just let us talk about it. All we want to do, me and my husband, is we just want to share like our son's life with whoever wants to hear about it. You know, I don't want to act like he didn't exist and he didn't matter. So like, if you're listening and you've never like had a miscarriage or anything, the way you can support a mother or father who did is just ask questions and let them talk it through, because it's so healing. You know, even being on this podcast, it's so healing to just tell your story, because people do hide miscarriages, and I don't want to be one of those people.
Yeah. Yeah. And by you sharing Jonah's story, it also gives a voice to those who might not feel ready to share yet, but want to share, you know, and I think things like this are really helpful in those ways too.
Definitely, for sure. So maybe one day I can give a follow-up story about like a year past miscarriage and let you know how I'm doing then.
Yes, you are welcome back anytime to share an update. I think that it's a beautiful thing to talk about life after loss. You know, sharing our miscarriage stories in general are really important, but also like how you got through the days after. And right now you are in the thick of it, and I'm sure you're seeing in what ways it can feel lighter on some days and heavier on other days. Yeah. But especially as you approach your due date, that's the thick of grief, is knowing that you should be giving birth and you already gave birth and it doesn't look the way you wanted it to, and it doesn't look the way you planned, and that's really difficult.
Yeah, I am looking forward to getting past the due date. I keep telling myself, like, once I get past it, like the comparison between me and every other pregnant person I know can finally stop, like, because that's been really tough.
Yeah. Well, Christine, thank you so much for sharing. And I also love that you shared the backstory in Jonah's name. I think as somebody in high school in 2007, whenever you said that, I was like, wait, do people not think of Jonah Hill as a big actor anymore?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's just, I guess that's the age range that we're in, that to us, he's probably still a big actor, but maybe to like Gen Z, they probably have no idea who he is or just don't care as much. But I love the backstory with his name. It's a beautiful name. And I appreciate you sharing his story along with your story with us.
Thank you so much for having me.